Oren looked at the alien, then back at Bupa with alarm.
Just drive, jerk.
The Gossam said, lowering his gun and stretching out in the cushy seat.
Our buddy Gold here has somewhere to be. And he'd better tell us what we want to hear.
Chapter 31. Now, kids, Annalene said, you realize this will be my land speeder and not yours, right? Just so we understand each other. Huh? Jabe said, sitting behind the controls. Equally spellbound, Callie ran her hand across the hood.
Oh, yeah. Sure, Mom.
Ben grinned at Annalene.
I think you're in trouble.
I have been, she said, for 17 years.
Annalene looked around the Delroy Speeder showroom. There were models here she'd never seen, nor was she likely to, out in the desert. With its open cockpit and ornate steering vanes up front, the JG-8 seemed the least practical of all. She'd need to keep it in the garage to preserve its ruby color.
It's nice,
Ben said, examining the display nearby. The price was there at the bottom, listed with options and without. Both figures were in the tens of thousands of credits. He looked up at Annalene.
It's a generous gift, to be sure.
A gift, right,
Callie said, rolling her eyes.
If you can't win their hearts, buy them. It's the Galt way.
She looked back at her mother, who was admiring the interior.
But it's the only way we'd ever get something like this.
Oh, I could afford to buy it myself, Annalene said. But I never would.
Ben raised an eyebrow.
I didn't think a frontier merchant did so well.
Annalene smiled.
What, did you think the personal deliveries to new arrivals cut into the profits?
I really don't. It's 20+ years of scrimping and saving, and avoiding whatever new thing Oren had for us to invest in.
She ran her hand along the rich fabric on the seats.
But this is amazing. I didn't think anything like this existed.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Asked a husky voice. The dealer, a happy squat human in his 50s, patted the rear engine lovingly. He gestured to the back seat.
It's the extended model, ma'am, straight from Sullust. Extra room in the back for light cargo, or for your children.
The retailer looked at the teenagers fawning over the vehicle and then at Ben.
Congratulations, sir, on raising such a fine family.
Ben stammered.
Oh, no, these aren't as fine as you think.
Annalene finished. She grinned at his unease.
Breathe, Ben.
She turned to the dealer. But the land speeder looks wonderful, Garn. What happens next?
Master Galt authorized a contract yesterday afternoon, ma'am. She's all yours.
The seller passed her a pouch containing the vehicle's maintenance codes.
Be sure to tell Oren that Garn Delroy provided good service.
I will.
Annalene looked back to see that Callie was already in the passenger seat, and that Jabe had started the engine.
I'd better go now, if I ever want to see it again.
Come on, Ben!
Ben followed her into the back seat. Annalene gasped as she sat down.
Have you ever ridden in anything as nice as this?
It is nice, he said.
Jabe guided the vehicle out through the wide doorway and into the busy streets of Mos Eisley. The foot traffic was noisier than the land speeder by far.
Take it easy now,
Annalene warned her son, leaning forward to be heard.
No problem.
Jabe smiled broadly and gripped the control stick. And the land speeder rocketed ahead, accelerating at a sudden rate that pushed 3 Calwells and a Kenobi back into their luxuriously cushioned seats. Jabe guided the gleaming vehicle through the curved streets at a breakneck pace,
The land speeder drew close to one building and then another, before whipping under the neck of a surprised Saurian Ronto. By the time the giant bolted, the JG-8 was careening down another street.
Stop! Stop!
A second after Annalene yelled her command, Jay punched the brake, and the world stopped moving outside. Driver and riders were tossed forward into the restraint webbing, which caught them like a mother catching a child. Annalene was less gentle with her own child.
Jabe, what were you thinking?
Sorry, I just touched it, Jabe said, stroking the steering yoke admiringly. Not as good on the turns as I'd like, but I bet Glomer could really soup it up.
Not going to happen, Annalene said, then seemed amused. She looked at her daughter. Both of you, switch into the back. The grown-ups are taking over. Callie opened her door and stepped out of the hovering vehicle, while Annalene stood in her seat, wondering where they'd wound up. They were in a bazaar in part of Mos Eisley she'd never been to before. Standing by her mother's side of the vehicle, Callie pointed off to the left.
Hey, is that the bazaars over there?
Annalene turned to look. It was a young couple, yes, but they were older than her recent houseguests. Not the bazaars, she said, squinting. But I do know them. Reclining in his seat, Ben smiled mildly. Annalene knows everyone.
Yeah, the man came through once looking for parts for something, she said. That's Cleek Lars' son, Owen.
Ben's eyes widened and locked on the couple emerging from behind the fruit stand, a basket of purchases in the man's hands.
Sad story, the Larses,
Annalene said, only half noticing Ben's sudden move to adjust his boot. Across the road from the land speeder, the brown-haired woman with Owen Lars turned, and Annalene saw what she was carrying.
Hey, they've had a baby.
Callie started to wave to the couple.
Let's call them over.
At once, and quite free from Jabe's grasp, the land speeder's control stick slammed forward, causing the vehicle to hurtle ahead again. Callie twirled and fell to the sandy street, buffeted by the jet wash from the twin engines. Aboard, the unrestrained Annalene fell backward into Ben's arms. The boy grabbed the steering yoke in panic. The vehicle skirted over the top of a wheeled cart and ripped through an intersection, even as its young driver fought the controls.
It's stuck! He yelled.
Annalene scrambled across the center control and helped him pull back on the stick. All at once, it gave way, and the acceleration died. The vehicle floated to a stop in front of an illegally parked starship, whose owner, fearing the arrival of authorities, ran for his loading ramp. She fell back into the back seat, out of breath. Ben seemed rattled and wary, but otherwise intact. She clutched at her son's sleeve.
Jabe, I told you to knock it off!
I didn't do it, Mom. It started on its own.
On its own?
Annalene felt as if an artery had ruptured in her head.
You nearly killed your sister.
Rising cautiously, Ben raised his hand.
No, no. I saw it, he said.
Jabe's telling the truth. I saw the control stick. It slipped forward on its own while you weren't looking. Both Calwells looked at Ben. Annalene looked incredulous. Jabe was absolutely stupefied.
Thanks, he said. I don't believe this,
Annalene railed.
Pricey land speeders don't just start driving.
Still, that's what I saw, Ben said.
Jabe saved us.
He bowed his head slightly to Jabe, who looked at him in wonder. Aggravated, Annalene shook her head.
I'm going to give that dealer a piece of my mind.
Ben put up his hand.
I don't think that's necessary.
Annalene glared at him.
What, you'll save us from wild animals and Tuskens, but not defective vehicles?
Ben was speechless. It was as harshly as Annalene had ever spoken to him, and she regretted it instantly. She sank back into the seat and tried to calm down. She looked out. They were in a neighborhood she'd never seen before.
Where are we?
Placing his hood back over his head, Ben scanned the area.
Nowhere near where we were,
he said, with what almost seemed like satisfaction. He was breathing easier now, Annalene saw, and it made her feel better. Until her comlink went off.
Jay tried to kill me!
The tinny voice shrieked.
It's all a dumb mistake,
Annalene told her daughter over the comm.
Stay where you are, Callie. We'll be back for you and...
Ben grabbed at her sleeve.
Annalene, he said, pointing out of his side of the vehicle.
There.
She looked out to see a land speeder that resembled Orin's, being driven by a Klaatu-Inian. It parked near the Mos Eisley Inn, and Bojo Bupa emerged from the back. The other passenger door opened.
Orin!
Annalene rose in her seat and watched, spellbound, as across the way, two armed humans stepped up and frisked Orin. His holster was empty, she saw, and the man made no move to oppose the search. He looked grim.
That's the gossam from the store,
Annalene said. Jabe reached for his blaster.
They're mugging him!
No. Ben reached forward and touched the boy's shoulder firmly.
I don't think that's what's happening.
Then what is happening?
Annalene wondered as the human and alien toughs conducted Orin past the hotel and toward an alleyway. She looked at Ben.
Orin's not even supposed to be in town today.
Jabe started to move again, only to be stopped this time by Annalene.
Mom, they're taking him away! We've got to help him!
We don't know what's happening,
Annalene said.
It could be business. It could be nothing, she added.
But she didn't believe it. She looked plaintively to Ben, who was already out of the vehicle. He walked to the driver's side and spoke quickly.
You two get Callie and return here. I'll see what I can find out.
You?
Jabe objected.
You're crazy! You don't even carry a blaster!
And if one is necessary,
Ben said sternly, that's more reason you shouldn't go. His expression softened.
Orin was one of the first people to welcome me here. If he needs help, I'll get it for him.
Reluctantly, Jabe agreed. Ben waved to Annalene.
See you soon.
Orin marched toward the durasteel doors of the townhouse. It was an unassuming place, a poor stone block house in the shadows of the Mos Eisley Inn, with a large dome to the left of the front entrance. It wasn't what he'd expected at all, and while he had an escort, there were no guards outside the building. It didn't make sense. Or maybe it did. Who'd be crazy enough to attack here? Bupa pointed him to the main entrance. Orin walked up the steps, ready for anything. He nearly fell back down them again when a black sensor orb jabbed out from an iris near the doorway. It spoke in Huttese and then again in Basic.
Identification and purpose.
Orin took a deep breath.
Orin Galt.
He looked at his hands and flexed his fingers.
I have important business to discuss with Jabba the Hutt.
Chapter 32. Human sweat dripped onto finely carved ceramic tiles. Jabba's foyer was as richly appointed as the building's exterior was modest. Oren wasn't surprised. He'd heard Jabba kept the presence in Mos Eisley, apart from his mountain palace. The hut seemed to want to convey a benevolent, paternal presence to the locals. There was nothing benevolent about the place, though. This was where the guards were, Oren realized. Four Morgamorians stood here, two at either side of the door, large poleaxes in their hands. They looked bored. Bojo, Boopa, and Jork followed Oren in, blasters at their sides. As they marched Oren down a wide hallway, he again felt the empty space in his holster. Boopa had even taken his comlinks. Mullen and Vika had no idea where he was. The audience chamber loomed ahead, behind a rollaway blast door. A silvery bipedal droid emerged and scanned Oren's body, confirming that he was unarmed. Oren felt like everyone was watching. Why did they put people through this? Was this really necessary? The droid said in guttural tones,
"Jabba will see you now."
Great sons, Oren thought, pulse racing as he urged his feet to move. How did it come to this? He inhaled deeply and walked through the doors. In the center of the rotunda, atop the long wooden platform built for a hut's power sled, Oren beheld something else. In place of a sled, a small figure in a light green business suit huddled over a desk. The pink and brown creature punched numbers into a data pad. Credits of all colors sat stacked in orderly piles on the desktop. A squat safe droid wobbled on its wheels nearby, its maw open and ready to accept currency. Oren didn't recognize the desk worker's species. He had an almost simian face, his cheeks accented by two straight, finely coiffed tufts of quill-like whiskers. Large, studious black eyes remained fixed on the calculations before him as he entered each new figure with zeal. And like the Gamorreans at the gate, he paid no mind to the new arrival. Jork shoved Oren toward the center of the room. Behind, Oren saw three more Gamorreans along the room's perimeter, and Boopa, who placed Oren's comlinks and blaster on a small table. Oren looked up into the dome above the room. Slivers of light from vents cut high in the bowl filtered down through heavy wire mesh netting, suspended meters above the floor. The metal web made no sense architecturally. The only break in the pattern was at the focal point of the dome, where a square mass sat over the center of the room. Oren squinted. Was something up there? With a cautious last look at the guards, Oren removed his hat and spoke. "I'm here."
"Indeed you are."
The being at the desk looked up and smiled toothily.
"I like this human. Observant."
"They told me Jabba was here," Oren said, feeling some blood re-entering his limbs. "Either they were wrong or you've lost weight." The suited alien slapped the desk for emphasis.
"Observant and with a sense of humor."
He sat down his data pad and stood.
"Yes, I like this. I want to be in business with such a person. I do."
"But who are you?"
"Ah, Morsep Benid, your humble servant," the creature said, bowing.
He was a full head shorter than Oren.
"I manage Jabba's portfolio when he's not here."
Clutching at the brim of his hat, Oren shifted uncomfortably. "Boopa said this was Jabba's place, so I assumed..."
"His immensity is a busy creature," Mosep said, lifting a small tray of money.
Like cleaning crumbs from a plate, he slid the credits into the safe droid's innards.
But Jabba knows the people of Mos Eisley feel better when he's around. So at this office, Jabba is always in. My cousin Lojog and I are the joint caretakers.
Is that so? Orin said, not caring. No Jabba? He was thrilled. Mosep looked up, a sparkle in his eye.
I also travel under Jabba's name from time to time, representing his interests. It doesn't hurt to confuse the competition. So yes, for today's purposes, with our master's kind permission, you could say I am Jabba.
Jork chortled.
Monkey Jabba, monkey Jabba!
That's unkind, Jork.
Mosep said, casting a sidelong glance at the tough.
You'll have to excuse my associate. He saw a Janissarian sand monkey once and hasn't failed to find his joke funny since. I am, of course, a Nimbanel.
He looked back at Orin.
A good tactic for Jabba, though, don't you think?
Orin felt impatient. Why are you telling me this?
Because you're part of the family, Orin, my boy. No secrets among us, are there?
I'm not part of your family. Jork giggled again. Mosep bristled his whiskers and reached for his datapad.
If you insist on getting to business, let's see. Yes, here's your record.
He read quietly, his hairless lips every so often smacking.
My, this is disturbing.
While Mosep continued the routine, his tongue occasionally clicking, Orin fought the urge to move to say something.
This is torture.
At the thought, Orin glanced up and saw movement above the netting. A dark, lithe figure moved past the lights, glancing against the mesh and raising a racket. Something's up there. Mosep didn't look up from the datapad.
That would be the cave-in whistlers, he said. Carnivorous flyers. They live in the rafters, but occasionally we hoist a treat up to them.
Orin looked up with alarm. The square shape nearly above him, he now saw, was a cage, attached to a pulley system, reaching into unseen heights above. A treat. Mosep looked at Bupa.
Yes, who was the treat today?
Bupa lifted a human leg bone from the floor beside him.
Problem gambler, I think.
Mosep smiled at Orin.
They've had their fill. You can relax.
Orin could do no such thing. There were more sounds above and more shadows. For a moment, he almost thought he saw a bipedal figure in motion, soaring from one of the ventilation slits to the cable. Another clatter followed, with more wings slamming the nets.
I've read enough.
The Nimbanil accountant set down the datapad.
You owe us quite a bit of money, my boy.
I'm not your boy, Benid.
All I know is certain obligations have not been met,
Mosep said.
But I'm getting ahead of myself. You called this meeting.
Mosep sat down in his chair and cracked his hairy knuckles.
I suspect it's not because you're ready to repay in full.
I'm working on that, Orin said, reaching for his courage. No, I want you out, he said firmly.
Out?
Mosep smiled mildly. His long whiskers bristled.
How so?
out of my hair. Your punks have been coming around my ranch, my store.
Your store?
Suddenly interested, Mosep looked again at the datapad.
No, no. My records show your holdings only include the ranch, the vehicles in the garages, and the barracks for your muscle. They're called farmhands. Or enraged. Not that you people would know. You haven't done a day's honest work in your lives. Oh, they work, Mosep said, idly sorting credits. It may not be poking around in the sand or sweating the air for water, but it's work. Investments are made, capital is expended, and a return is expected.
Yeah, or you sweat us.
You're the one making this unpleasant, Orin. Or Master Galt, if you prefer.
The fact that you're dealing with me ought to be a sign of respect, I should think.
My superior knows there are different kinds of business, and that they must be conducted in different ways. He turned his black eyes on Orin. Believe me, if Jabba wanted to deal unpleasantly, you'd have known it by now. Still, we must check on our investments, and that means going to the site, including this store which you seem to keep offices in. Another clatter from above. The hoodlums paid it no mind.
My business depends on my reputation, Orin said, chastened. Part of the value in my operation is goodwill. I've worked 20-odd years to build it. If your thugs start showing up, I lose that.
Indeed.
You bet, Orin said. People will start to measure the water coming out of Galt drums to see if I'm shorting them.
Mosep rose from the desk and began pacing.
It's too late for such concerns. You comprehend that, Orin. You're a good businessman. Or you were one. You know we can't let this continue.
Orin looked around, wary of any movement.
Look, this year's harvest is going to be big, real big. It's taken a while to get the new vaporators set up right, but it's about to turn around.
I don't understand much about agriculture, I'm afraid, the accountant said. But I know arithmetic. Even if we kept to the payment plan you were on, I don't see any way you could make poor Jabba whole again. Not even, he added, if you tap your other resources.
The comment threw Orin. Other resources? What are you talking about? Mosep tapped the data pad and smiled knowingly.
Pretty clever what you boys are doing out there. Even if Jabba thought of it first, more than a decade ago.
I don't know what you're...
Fine. Play innocent.
Mosep pitched the data pad to the desk, where it disturbed the credit stacks.
I guess it's so easy anyone can do it. Though this year's Tuskens aren't much for fighting back.
Another ruckus from above. Orin shook his head, trying to register everything.
Wait, did you say you were going to change the payment plan?
Yes, Mosep said. You might say that we want out.
He fingered his vest buttons.
Double your usual payment for tomorrow, and the full balance in 2 weeks.
2 weeks, Orin gulped.
Even the first condition was impossible.
I've tried to keep up. You've seen it. It's just this last couple of payments that have been short. Why now?
Mosep grinned. I thought you wanted it to be over.
It'll never be over,
Oren said enraged. I know you people. You get your claws into someone and you never let go.
In another time, Mosef said, we'd be perfectly happy to have a long-term engagement with your business. We find you to be rather inventive for a rural. But the truth is Jabba is in need of cash now, not investments.
In need of...
Oren looked around. Apart from the macabre mess of a ceiling, the rest of the room stank of money, right down to the finely woven tapestry hanging behind the platform, depicting a scene from Hutt history.
You seem to be doing pretty well.
Mosep looked at the credits on the desk and chuckled.
No, Jabba needs a good bit more. It's this galactic empire the Republic became. It's quite the change. Until we see how it'll deal with the Hutts, Jabba wants as much cash on hand as possible.
To bribe the new people, you mean?
Or whatever is necessary. No business likes uncertainty.
Mosep looked at his pocket chrono.
Sir, 24 hours for the penultimate payment, shall we say?
Oren slouched, feeling the weight of the galaxy. He stammered.
I have some plans. I can get it. But I might need more time. If you could take a little less tomorrow...
In the center of the room, Mosep snapped his fingers, suddenly reminded.
Yes, that's right. I'd forgotten about that. We've taken a little less already, these last three payments. It's why we sent you Bojo.
He looked to the guards.
Well, as you've done us the convenience of coming here, you can be punished for that right away.
Oren dropped his hat.
What?
Smash his hands,
Jork said, cackling.
He won't need that swank drivey-drivey anymore.
Nah,
Boopa said, slapping the Catuinian in the chest with the back of his hand.
Smash his legs. He spends time in that store. Everything he needs is just a crawl away.
No, no, no.
Mosep shook his head vigorously, his face disappearing in a blur of whiskers.
This gentle being still has a day to find payment. We can't allow punitive measures, however, just to impede his mobility.
Mosep looked Oren over.
We'll give him an hour with the nerve disruptor in the basement. Sir, what shape is your heart in?
Oren's eyes bulged.
I suppose we'll find out.
Mosep said, nodding to the guards.
One for the show, please.
Then he beckoned toward the droid, standing by the doorway.
I'll watch the feed from up here. Can you bring me some cash?
Chapter 33.
Oren lunged to the right. He'd seen the sealed door there, providing hut-sized access to the street. But a Gamorrean waddled in front of the exit, giant blade in giant hand. Another hulking figure lumbered toward Oren from behind. Bojo, Boopa, and Jork blocked the main entrance and any chance of reaching his comlinks and blaster, still sitting tantalizingly on the table.
Time to play Fry the Farmer,
Boopa said.
Fry! Fry!
Jork exclaimed with glee. Oren looked around in desperation.
All he saw was Mosep trying to escape the center of the room before the Gomorrian behemoth stepped on him.
"Careful, friends," Mosep said. "There's no need to be hasty. Most accidents happen in the workplace."
The Gomorrian behind him lunged. Orin twisted and fat fingers raked at his back. But the movement only brought Orin into Jork's reach.
"Fly, fly, fly!"
"No!"
Orin wrested free from the Klaatuinian and fell toward the wooden platform. His chest slammed against the tile floor. He tried to wriggle forward, but Jork grabbed at his feet. Writhing, the farmer rolled over. And at that instant, he heard a metallic snap. A dark metal shape appeared above the heads of his attackers. The heavy metal cage from the rafters crashed down, pummeling one of the advancing Gomorrians, caroming off the green brute, and knocking Jork off his feet. Startled, another of the Gomorrians stumbled backward and landed on Mosep. The accountant howled in pain. Bupa pointed up into the dome. A square opening now existed in the mesh where the metal prison had been. Still on his back, Orin saw what Bupa saw. A tan-clad figure high in the lofty shadows, clinging to what remained of the chain.
"Somebody's up there!"
the Gossam shouted.
"Blast him!"
Forgetting the farmer, Bupa started shooting upward. Jork joined him, and then two more guards entered from the hallway, blasters raised. Orin took a quick look at the figure above. Whoever was up there was now in spectacular motion, using the cage's severed lifting chain to bounce from wall to wall. Orin couldn't wait any longer. On his hands and knees, he quickly scuttled up the platform and behind the desk. Orin instantly realized that the Nimbinal's desk was in the safest place in the room. All the gun-toting thugs were firing upward, through the gap and the meshwork. And while the shot seemingly had no effect on the impossibly nimble intruder, they did get the attention of the dozen or so cave-in whistlers in the dome. Annoyed by the blaster fire, the meter-long reptilian flyer soared downward, swooping through the opening toward anything moving.
"Yarr!"
Jork yelled as a whistler latched onto his shoulder and bit. The Gomorrians were squealing, trying to fend off attacking flyers with their axes.
"The door!"
Bupa yelled, cowering behind a statue.
"Open the doors to the street!"
"Only Jabba's sled triggers the door!"
came a response from somewhere in the room. Orin hid under the desk. Now and again, the terrified farmer heard a fleshy thud nearby. He peeked out to search for a weapon, but could find only credits scattered on the floor around him.
"Close the blast door!"
someone yelled.
"They'll get into the house!"
But Orin did not hear a door being moved. All he heard were screams, the thunder of feet, and the high-pitched whistles of cave-in predators that had evidently gone off their diets. The ruckus finally faded when the parties involved took the fray into the rest of the residence. The room fell silent. Orin cowered beneath the desk, which had twisted sideways in the bustle. Before he could emerge, however, he saw Bupa creeping out from behind a bronze statue. Weary and frazzled, the Gossam looked up and around. Spying Orin, he pulled a blaster from one of his holsters.
"I didn't do this!" Orin yelled.
"I'm sure you didn't, Waterman. But somebody's gonna suffer for this,"
Bupa said, climbing the platform. He pointed the blaster down at Orin, underneath the desk. Orin felt the sudden thump of boots on the desktop above him, out of his sight. He saw Bupa looking up, astonished.
"You!"
Bupa yelled.
"I've seen you before!"
Orin saw the Gossam raise his blaster
and vanish. Boopa rocketed off his feet and flew toward the far wall. He slammed headfirst into the pore stone surface, and then his limp frame dropped to the floor, like an insect falling off a windshield. Orin blinked. Had a whistler grabbed Boopa? He couldn't understand how. The creatures weren't large enough. One settled on Boopa's body now and began to feast. Hearing no others, Orin crept out from beneath the desk. There was no one standing atop it. Who had Boopa seen? Above, through the square gap in the mesh, the broken chain continued to sway, light from the slit windows glinting off it. One window was open to the outside, but there were no whistlers to escape through it. Apart from the one now busy with Boopa, all were gone. Stumbling off the edge of the platform, Orin witnessed the mess the room had become. Two Gamorreans lay dying, as well as two henchmen Orin hadn't seen before. There was his blaster on the floor near the overturned table, along with his white comlink. He could hear the red one beeping somewhere in the debris. He didn't bother to look for it. His hat was crushed beneath the cage. And then, there were the credits, scattered everywhere from Mosep's desk. Without thinking, Orin began stuffing his pockets. Some of it was surely his money after all. No one here would be the...
Hello?
Orin stopped dead at the sound of the voice. From underneath a Gamorrean, Mosep moaned.
Someone out there? I believe I'm fractured.
I didn't do this, Mosep, Orin said, forgetting the credits and edging toward the door.
I'm just a businessman.
Stopping in the doorway, Orin calculated for a moment, then turned. With a strong heave, he rolled the Gamorrean off Mosep's body. The Nimbinal gasped for air. Weakly, Mosep turned his head to the right. Seeing the mess, he sighed.
I'm beginning to think this particular trap is ill-conceived.
He looked back at Orin.
You have my gratitude.
The accountant wheezed, still prone. And anything else? Orin asked, clutching his sides to hide the currency bulging in his pockets.
24 hours.
Mosep beheld the room.
I expect I'll have some remodeling bills to pay before Jabba returns.
Orin gave the room a last look and ran. Chapter 34. Annalene clicked off her red comlink. Orin's still not answering, she said. What good was having a direct communications link to the man if he never answered? That is, if he could answer. Standing beside her new landspeeder in front of the Mos Eisley Inn, Annalene fought to dispel the thought. Orin and Ben had been gone for more than an hour. She and Jabe had fetched Callie, and then she'd dropped Jabe off to retrieve the light van to give him something to do. Anything to keep the boy from rushing into the townhouse to save Orin, if he needed saving. Tired of waiting, she pocketed the comlink. I'm just going to go to the door. Callie tugged her sleeve. Wait, Mom! Here comes Jabe! The light van hovered to a stop next to the new landspeeder.
Look who I found, Jabe said, hopping out.
The side door opened and Mullen and Vika disembarked. Oh, joy, Callie said.
Hush.
Annalene walked up to Mullen, who looked more bewildered than usual. Mullen, have you been able to reach your father? The young man mumbled something inaudible.
Beside him, Vika shook her head. Annalene pressed them.
What are you all doing in Mos Eisley?
Tongue-tied, Mullen looked at his sister. Vika shrugged uncomfortably.
We were just, you know, in town.
Annalene stared at the pair.
You're a wonderful help.
The Galt siblings clearly knew something, which was an unusual enough condition for them in Annalene's eyes. But before she could ask further, a horrific screech pierced the air.
Look there!
Jabe said, pointing up the street. The heavy front door to the townhouse opened. Half a dozen people of various species bolted from it, running for their lives. In the next second, three winged creatures jetted through the doorway, one after another. They soared low over the heads of panicked pedestrians before angling for the rooftops.
Cave-in whistlers,
Annalene said, unbelieving. She was on off-world safari after all, without ever leaving Tatooine. Last, Orin emerged from the townhouse. Flushed, hair mussed, the man looked as if he'd lost an argument with a Wookiee. He started to head one way up the street before changing his mind and turning in a different direction. He was about to turn yet again when Annalene saw him and called out.
Hey!
She approached him.
Orin, what was going on in there? What was that about?
Flustered, Orin looked back at the building and started walking. What passed for police in Mos Eisley arrived, while others gathered to watch the fattened whistlers roosting across the way. Orin charged through the crowd. Annalene had to walk quickly to keep up. Orin finally slowed when he reached where Boopa had parked the USV-5, some distance from the townhouse. There, he caught his breath, and flashed a beleaguered grin to Annalene.
Well, I'm not selling any water to that place. Are you joking? Who were those people?
A dead end, he said, pulling a mirror from inside his landspeeder. Serves me right for trying to follow every lead. He combed his hair with his fingers. Annalene looked at the others in disbelief.
Yeah, it was a business deal,
Mullen said. Vika nodded.
That's it. That's why we're here.
She gulped.
Yeah.
Orin rolled his eyes. He moved to straighten his collar. But the act of tugging at his shirt caused dozens of credit chips to tumble from his vest pockets. Calwells and Galt's alike gawked.
Orin, what is this?
Annalene demanded. Orin knelt, red-faced, as he tried to collect the credits from the dusty ground. It was mostly small change, but from a wide variety of systems, and there was a lot of it.
The, client compensated me for my travel.
Callie looked at the pile of currency in his hands and laughed.
Did you come here from Coruscant?
The jittery man didn't answer. He looked up at his son.
Get down here, Mullen, and give me your hat.
Mullen stared blankly.
Where's your hat, Dad?
Shut up and give it to me!
Mullen passed his hat to his father. Orin resumed his frantic gathering, only looking up when he saw motion from the end of the street in the opposite direction from the townhouse. Orin dropped the money and stood.
Kenobi,
he said, watching Ben approach. Annalene turned.
You're back!
She looked at Ben and then at the townhouse.
I thought you were going to check on Orin.
Ben bowed.
It seems you found him first.
Annalene stared at him searchingly. Jabe shook his head.
Big help you were.
Orin looked at the ground, puzzling things through. His eyes widened.
You were looking for me?
You've...
He stopped mid-sentence and looked back at the townhouse in the distance. He turned back to Ben.
You've been here all the time?
Ben pointed over his shoulder with his thumb.
I'm having some repair work done.
The Calwells were kind enough to direct me where I was going. And yes, Annalene thought she saw you earlier, but I got sidetracked by a rather insistent street merchant. He clasped his hands together.
Has there been some excitement?
Orin glowered at him.
No, none at all.
He turned back to Annalene and saw the glistening new landspeeder behind her. His face brightened.
Hey, you got it!
It's what you sent us here for, she said. It's lovely, Orin, but it costs so much.
It's nothing. I'm good for it.
Orin gestured to his feet, where Mullen and Vika collected the remaining credits. He stepped over them to join Annalene next to the new vehicle. Putting his left hand on the JG-8's front steering vane and his right arm around Annalene's midsection, he managed to hug both her and the landspeeder at the same time.
She's a beauty, isn't she?
Accepting the hug despite her unease, Annalene nodded.
It is.
And so's my Annie. He announced to the others, his arm grasping her more tightly. A beauty, I mean. Orin released her and turned her to face him.
Annie, listen. This is important. It's, why I wanted to be here in the city with you now. I knew Mos Eisley was special for you. He took her right hand. That land speeder is just the start. I want you to marry me.
Marry you? Annalene's eyes bulged.
What?
The whole Oasis has had us married for years. What are we waiting for?
We've been waiting? This was news to Annalene. She looked out at the others. Callie and Jabe looked as astonished as she was. Mullen and Vika, attentive. And Ben simply watched, emotionless. Orin clutched her hand harder.
I've half raised your kids.
You've helped me raise mine.
Don't blame that on me.
Annalene yanked her hand away. She looked back at Mullen and Vika.
No offense.
None taken.
Mullen growled. Both Galt siblings held hats full of cash. Annalene turned on Orin.
You have to admit this is strange. Until recently, you've never shown the slightest interest in me.
Come on, Orin implored. You know that's not true. Serious interest. You joked, sure.
If I joked, it was only because I was afraid, Orin said. Afraid you wouldn't think I was worthy of taking Danar's place.
He looked away.
Well, I've been working. All this time, I put in improving my ranch. All the work with the settlers call. It's been me working on me. For you.
For me?
So you could see what I can be,
he said. Annalene's eyes goggled. They had an audience now. Bystanders who had drifted away from the city's attempts to trap the Cave-In Whistlers. Suddenly self-aware, she stepped back.
Are you looking for an answer now?
Soon, Orin said. He looked back up the street in the direction of the townhouse.
Sure, why not now? I know you like Kerner Plaza. They have weddings there all the time. What do you think?
I think you need to take one of your stress pills.
No joke, Annie, he said, sinking down on one knee. I'm for real.
Shaken, she looked around again. At the landspeeder. At Ben. At the others, and then again at Ben. Her eyes back on Orin, she spoke a little louder, partly for the benefit of the strangers.
I'll need a little time to think about it, she said, smile wilting a little. Orin rose from the ground and dusted off his trouser leg. He bowed to Annalene and turned back to his vehicle. The loiterers, sensing the moment had ended, drifted away. Seeing Orin conferring with his children, Annalene spoke with hers. Have you ever seen anything like it? Callie shook her head. If Vika Galt becomes my sister, I'm going to become one of those Ba'omar monks. They cut your brains out, Ben said. Trust me, Callie said. It'd be preferable. Speaking quietly, Orin finished the 30-second summation of events in the townhouse for Mullen and Vika. We're not going to get out of this by talking, he said. He wiped the sweat from his brow. It's not unexpected. Always two plans, you know.
I'm not so sure about plan two,
Mullen said. Orin looked at his son exhausted.
Great sons, what's wrong with Zed this time?
Surely his ribs have healed by... He called from the clinic. He's been taking the wrong painkillers, Vika said. Zed's addicted to Wookiee meds. Orin shook his head.
He is incredibly fired.
Do we have to go tonight?
Mullen asked.
I don't think we can go without him.
Tonight or nothing, Orin said. We need a fourth and fast. But I think I've found him. Orin looked at the Cowells, gathered between their light van and Annalene's swanky ride. Jabe nodded back to him respectfully. Orin had been bringing Jabe into his confidence a little at a time, and the boy seemed more than eager to be helpful.
Yeah, that'll actually work pretty well,
Orin said, walking toward the group.
Jabe, he called out. You want to ride back to the Oasis with us?
Jabe looked surprised by the offer. Standing by the Galt vehicle, Vika winked at him. Excited, Jabe looked to his mother. Annalene was skeptical. Callie has to take the light van home now to get the animals fed. I didn't want her going alone.
We'll drive along behind as far as my place, Orin said. My cook droid will get Jabe fed, and I'll drop him at home tonight. Everyone will be safe.
Overwhelmed by the earlier attention, Annalene assented.
It's settled, Orin said, waving the boy to his landspeeder.
Turning, Orin saw Ben standing in contemplation, hood shading his eyes. I thought you had some repair work to pick up, Orin said frostily.
That I do.
Ben nodded and turned to Annalene. I can find my own way home.
No,
she said. I'll drop you in the cooling unit back at your place. She looked over at Orin, who seemed none too happy. I'm still my own woman, I think.
Fine, Orin said, the old smile returning. Then I'll see you tonight.
Chapter 35.
So this is how a hermit lives, Annalene thought as she looked around Ben's house. It was cleaner inside than outside, which was what she'd imagined, knowing Ben. But the furnishings were impossibly spare. She could not picture him living here in any kind of comfort at all. Every day must be like camping, which might not be such a bad way to go, she thought, remembering the clutter of her own life. Annalene finished washing her hands in the basin and dried them quickly. It wouldn't do to linger here, when she'd just come inside to freshen up, and she'd had to finagle that. But she had a good excuse. Rue had found her way home, as Annalene had predicted, but she'd been wrong about how close the animal was to birth.
Annalene and Ben had arrived just as the first sun touched the western Jundland Mountains and found mother and son right outside the trough. Annalene's examination of the Eopie and her kid found both healthy. The exertions of the morning must have brought on the early labor. With a last look around, Annalene stepped through the curtain and into the warm evening. Ben knelt beside Rue, who was happily munching feed. Annalene lingered outside the door, not wanting to disturb the serene moment. But Ben noticed her presence. "Rue's quite energetic, given her ordeal," he said, patting the new mother's snout. "How long should she rest?" "Eopies are made out of elastic bands," Annalene joked. "She's probably ready to race." Ben marveled. "So soon?" Annalene laughed. "Believe me, I envy her. Jabe knocked me off my feet for a month." She walked into the yard. The repaired cooling unit sat amid the other junk outside. Ben had remained mostly quiet during the drive to fetch it and the journey here. He'd added little to his tale about Oren's absence, apart from a question about the man's finances, which she found oddly timed. Ben hadn't pried further, and he hadn't asked at all about the one thing she most wanted an opinion about.
"Well,"
Ben said, rising, "I'd better get the equipment inside while there's still light. It was a lovely day. Thanks for the help." With that, he passed her and walked toward the coolant unit. Annalene stood frozen as he knelt beside it. Finally, she cracked. She marched into his field of view. "Ben," she said, "should I marry Oren?" Ben paused. "Do you want to marry Oren?"
"Not especially," she said. "A lot of people think I should."
Ben heaved the unit from the ground.
"I'm sure your other friends would be more qualified to advise. Lily..."
"No,"
Annalene said. "Not Lily." She walked after him and blocked him from the doorway. He looked at her, puzzled, as she tugged the coolant unit from his hands and set it down by the floor.
"I want to know what you want me to do."
Ben shrugged.
"It's your life. Every individual decides his or her own fate."
Annalene groaned.
"Everything's an adage with you. Ben, are you telling me you've never had to deal with a real-life situation? Or you had to make a decision about someone else?"
Finally seeming to sense her frustration, Ben looked away.
"I'm human," he said. "There was someone once. It wasn't to be."
"And you gave up and moved to the Jundland Wastes?" She laughed. "I'd say you didn't find the right person."
"Perhaps I did,"
Ben said, looking back at her from beneath his hood.
"But I wasn't the right person." "More double talk from crazy Ben," Annalene said.
Feeling her confidence grow, she took a step toward him, cutting the space between them in half.
"Well, I don't think you're so crazy. I think you've found someone you didn't expect to find. And that's not a bad thing," she said, reaching toward him.
Ben put his hands before him to slow her advance.
"Annalene, no, I can't do this. Are you sure?"
She looked up into his eyes.
"I think you can."
"No, I definitely can't."
"Everyone loses the reins once in a while."
He gave an uncomfortable half-chuckle.
"I said that, didn't I?"
"Yep." She clasped his hands and pulled him closer, and he drew back and turned away.
"What is it?"
She stared at his back. "Is it because of Oren?
Don't worry about that. I've told you, I don't feel that way about him."
"And I don't think you feel that way about me either,"
Ben said, walking toward the Eopies.
"You're the expert on what I think."
She smiled warmly.
"Well, that's proof right there that something's happening between us."
"Oren's known me my whole life and doesn't know what I think."
You've met me a handful of times, and you can read my mind. Her eyes sparkled in the evening light. Often. So either you're superhumanly perceptive, Ben, or I've had your complete attention. Ben took Rue's lead and walked her to the corral. Her wobbly child followed. Annalene, I think you have a good home, a lovely family, and a successful business. And I think you are bored out of your mind. She looked at him incredulous.
You think I'm that simple?
No, he said, lifting the kid over the fencing. I think you're that complicated. Annalene crossed her arms.
You think poor little Annie gets bored with Tatooine, and the first time a stranger from off-world comes along, it's off to the races.
Others have done it.
Well, you're wrong.
He looked back at her.
Honestly? You're not bored?
Annalene turned and kicked the coolant unit with a clang.
I'm too tired to be bored. I've got a home that's falling apart because I'm dead every evening. Half the time, I fall asleep at the kitchen table. My kids keep trying to find new ways to kill themselves as if this place weren't dangerous enough. And my business...
She sputtered as she stormed toward the corral.
My business is playing Mother Bantha to a herd of full-grown orphans. People are not flying to the rim to trade places with old Annalene.
I know some who would. Ben said, his back leaning on the fence. She glared at him. He began to say something and stopped. For a moment, there was only the sound of the baby Eope nuzzling his mother. At last, Ben spoke again. Annalene, I think you've learned to live with these things. But you can't pretend anymore that they challenge you. There's too much to you. Turning, he placed both hands on the fence railing and looked out onto the desert. You've reached your limit and you're looking for a lifeline. And since you think you can't move, you're desperate for someone to come along and keep you company in that world. Someone who challenges you. I don't know, Annalene said, joining him at the fence. Herbal Inepti is pretty challenging. You know what I mean. She looked down at the Eopis inside. She did know what he meant. You're telling me that you don't escape a trap by luring someone else in. Every trap has multiple ways out, Ben said. I saw that just today. Annalene thought that a strange comment, but he changed the subject. Besides, he said, I'd make a terrible shopkeeper. You can barely shop right, she said. They laughed. Ben started to move from the fence when she touched his arm, less insistently this time. Wait, she said. You're not going to get away that easily. This isn't just about me, she said. This is about you. He put his hand up again. I told you, I'm not looking for it. No, Annalene said. Not that. I asked you outside the claim that day if something bad had happened to you. You said it happened to someone else. Yes. She grabbed his wrist. You're a liar. Excuse me. You're lying to yourself. This thing, this bad thing, it may have happened to someone else, someone you cared about, I'm guessing, and that means it happened to you, too. Ben resisted. I don't. Yes, you do. Something horrible happened, Ben, and it's ripping you apart. Maybe it's why you're here. But you're trying to go on like you didn't care, like you weren't. She paused. His hands back on the railing, he looked up at her. You were there, Annalene whispered. Weren't you, when this bad thing happened? She mouthed. You were there. Ben closed his eyes and nodded. It didn't just happen, he said, hardly breathing. I caused it. Annalene's mind raced. Raced and veered into dark imaginings that she wanted to dismiss. But Ben was serious about whatever it was, and she had to be too. You... You hurt someone?
They hurt themselves, Ben said. I came along at the end. The very end. But I was also there at the beginning. I should have stopped it. She shook her head.
You're just one man.
I should have stopped it! The railing shook. I failed! It was on me to stop it, and I didn't. And I will have that on my conscience forever. Annalene's eyes looked left and right. The fence quaked so hard under his hands that she thought the very posts might fly out of the ground. Ben, you can't blame...
You can't know!
He turned and clutched at her shoulder, surprising her.
I failed everyone.
Do you have any idea how many people have paid for that? Do you know how many people are paying right now?
I only know one, she said.
Ben let go of her. His arms wilted. She had never seen such anguish in anyone's eyes before.
What had he been through? What had he done? What did he think he had done?
So many theories about his past had coalesced and dispersed since she'd known him. Annalene struggled to run through them now. Had there been a domestic tragedy? Had he been a soldier whose actions had cost his platoon? An executive whose negligence had wiped out his corporation? Her thoughts ranged from the small to the improbably large, before determining that it didn't matter. Hurt was hurt. And whether Ben had harmed someone before, she judged him to be no danger now. Except, perhaps, to his own happiness. Every human instinct told her to embrace him. But something else somewhere told her to step back. Which she did.
Ben, I think I understand. You're out here, I guess, to atone. Maybe more than that, I don't know, but that's part of it. If talking about things would help...
Ben shook his head.
It won't.
He glanced at the setting suns, then took a deep breath. His body straightened.
I'm sorry. I do thank you for the day out, but you should get home while there's still light.
Annalene watched as he turned back to his house. The familiar reserve had returned. She had gotten in for a moment, she could tell that for sure. But she saw she would get no farther. Not today. Hands hanging at her sides, Annalene walked back to her landspeeder, which gleamed crimson in the sunset. At its side, she turned back and looked at Ben.
All right, she said.
I'm not going to hide outside your door waiting for you to tell me. You can do it in your own time. He stopped in his path and looked away to the east, melancholy.
Time I have. Well, I have it too,
Annalene said, slipping behind the controls of the vehicle.
I'm not going anywhere.
She started the engine. Did you hear that, Ben? I am not going anywhere.
So when you're ready, you know what the sign says.
She drove away into the dusk, leaving behind a contemplative Ben, who, she suspected, remembered very well what she meant. Find what you need at Danar's Claim.
Meditation. Annalene, this is becoming a problem. For her... And that makes it a problem for me. Now, I know what you're thinking. I've been tested on this score before, and I've seen what it means to get too close to someone. Years ago, with Siri Tachi, you were there for part of that. And then there was Satine. I vowed never to put anyone else in similar jeopardy.